Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of the Total Control Podcast, brought to you by OpRainfall.com for the week of April 10th. Here where we try and satisfy some, if not all, of your niche gaming needs. I am one of your hosts, Cesaro Lopez, and joining me today is Benny. Hey, man.
Hey, what's up?
It's just us today.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a two-man show here, but yeah, we should be able to have some good conversation.
Everyone has social lives that they must attend to.
Yeah.
I think Justin has some kind of date or something, so...
Ooh.
Lucky him. I'm currently knee-deep in editorials and homework, so I've been chained to my desk.
That's what happens. Well, I guess we could just, real quick, this is going to be a special show because our Steve and I did an interview with Loopysoft developers and developer and writer Talsim and Daniel, and it's all about some of the visual novels that they have coming out. And the interview itself really goes further than that. You get an insight on how visual novels are made and created, and how ideas come, and It's really good, insightful interview. So, please, we'll put that in this podcast in a couple minutes after we're done, discussing some stuff. But, yeah, so let us know what you think. And yeah, but Benny, what have you been playing?
Well, I've still been playing Senran Kagura Shinobi Versus for the stream. Currently, there's a lot in the news about that this week, and maybe we'll get into it a little bit later. But sticking with what I've been playing, we finished the Gessen Girls arc this week, and that was a really damn interesting arc. It's interesting how their storyline, if you play through the Hanzo storyline and then the Gessen storyline, without giving any specific spoilers, they don't correlate, which it seems to mean that each academy's individual story can be taken as a separate story altogether. They'll have similar elements, but there's not like a canon route of this one, then this one, then this one, then this one. But it really was quite interesting. I really do like the Gessen Girls as a whole. I realize there probably wasn't as much depth to them as the Hanzo Girls, but at the same time, this was their introduction, so it was more to establish them than anything else.
Yeah, I ended up platinuming that game. I think Justin and I did. It's pretty easy. You should try and get it.
I think I will. I was looking through the list. Most of it is just clearing all of the story missions and then clearing all of the side story missions for each girl. There's a couple of more complex ones, such as the 7,777 hit combo, which, from what I understand, just use Hibari and her hip drop attack.
Yeah, the butt drop thing.
But it doesn't look to be that difficult to platinum, so I'll probably go for it. I haven't been playing it unless it's been on the stream or to get some footage and some material for something I'm writing. So just because of the fact that that's kind of the only time I get to sit down and play something, and I'd like to see have the stream be able to see what I'm doing. Other than that, the only other thing I'll just quickly touch on is, as many of you know, this week the anime season started. I actually got to sit down and watch anime for the first time in, I think, 6 or 7 weeks since school started. Hello Kaneiro Mosaic was on, and dear God, I'm happy to report that show is still Kaneiro Mosaic. So if you wanted some more awesomeness, there you go. It's basically your slice of life moe show for the season. There's a couple of other shows me and my roommate did watch, but I would probably say Kaneiro Mosaic. Triage X was quite interesting as well. Of course, every single time I see that motorcycle, I just want to start playing the Kamen Rider theme in my head. but I think that's about it. I don't want to go too much into the anime just because I know that's Justin's department, but I'll just say, hey, if you're looking for stuff to watch, now is a great time to jump in because there's a bunch of new series that are starting both on Funimation and Crunchyroll. So give it a shot. Keep an eye on the site. I'm pretty sure Justin will be covering those shows as they come out.
Yeah, I just started an anime, one that seems to be getting really popular. I don't know the Japanese name, but the English name is something like, is it wrong to pick up girls in a dungeon?
We were going to maybe think about starting that last night, and the only reason we skipped it is because we had a couple of action-heavy shows, and I wanted to get one slice of life in before I needed to go to work. Mm-hmm. So I think we... No, it was the Magical Girl show, which is sponsored apparently by Subaru.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not... Let's just put it this way. When they transform, they have these – they're akin to broomsticks that they're flying on. They call them drive shafts, and they make engine noises. It still strangely works. It actually is quite entertaining to watch.
What's that show called?
I don't know, but if you want to give me a couple of seconds, I can look it up.
Yeah, for right now, for that dungeon – the girl dungeon anime – one of the main characters, Hestia, has basically broken the internet. People continuously post pictures of her, like, all the time. And it is getting out of control, the amount of pictures I see of this character. And it's barely the first episode, and everyone seems to love her. She's a goddess. She's pretty cool, I guess. The whole anime section around where you go into dungeons and you get to fight monsters and stuff, and at the end of the day your goddess or whoever you're loyal to will level you up and your stats go up.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically it's like Log Horizon and Sword Art Online in real life type of thing.
Okay.
Pretty good. It's kind of action heavy. There's a lot of blood. But there's also that kind of silliness where there's a main character guy, and it's basically his harem, kind of. But he's totally clueless to the girls that are interested in him, and he likes this one girl. So it's typical, but it's fun. I don't know. I'm gonna stick with it. I think the second episode airs today or tomorrow, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that just from the title, I was like, I must watch this because it sounds like it'll be a fun, good time. I'm probably gonna only be following for the most part just Kinmoza, only because of the fact that I was so heavily invested in season one that I want to watch. That's my weekly cooldown show. But once school finishes in about 6 weeks, I'm going to be marathoning stuff over the summer. So that'll be probably one of the shows that'll get marathoned. Also, for the Magical Girl show, it's Wish Upon the Palladius. And Palladius is spelled Pleiades. So it's
my queue is so big on Crunchyroll right now.
Yeah, I know. I know that battle. That struggle is real.
But yeah, so...
But I think that's everything I've been doing. So what about you, though, Zara? What have you been playing?
This is totally weird for me because I've never done this before, but I've been playing a cell phone game.
Which one?
It came out last month on March 26th. It is Final Fantasy Record Keeper. And... I'm having a good time. It's made by DNA, the people that just partnered up with Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't put any money into it. I was expecting there to be some kind of block where in order to continue with this game, you need to pay. But no, it's actually my first like cell phone game that I've gone into. It's really cool. You collect characters while you run through these dungeons, but the dungeons are made in terms of like story. So you go to Final Fantasy VII and you'll do where you get off the train and you fight the first boss, and it's just battling kind of, but you get to attack, defend, or heal, or use magic or something, and then you get like limit breaks and stuff like that. The thing that's the best part of this cell phone game, it's the music. The music for every Final Fantasy that you're allowed to play, which is right now it's like 4, 5, 7, and 10, the music is there, you know, and it's like it sounds so good. Just nostalgia, you know. It's just really fun, and they have these events where the one that's going on right now, you can get Tifa in your party, and if you clear the whole dungeon you can get Sephiroth.
Okay.
They're all in sprite form. I mean, it's all like 16-bit, you know. They're not like fully 3D or anything. So that's kind of cool too. Equipment, different equipment is from all different Final Fantasies. So it'll tell you what the weapon is, and then it'll tell you which Final Fantasy it's from. And if you use the characters and the equipment from that Final Fantasy in the level, those will get a boost. Those characters will get an experience boost, or those weapons would become stronger. So it's kind of cool. And like I said, I haven't put a dollar into it, and I've gotten pretty far. I think the pay comes in if you want more rare items or a specific item that you don't want to wait to randomly draw, because you get one free draw a day. So I guess if that's what you're looking for, then that's open, that's available to you. Or maybe if you die a lot. But you know, I've been playing this game not really grinding or anything, and I haven't died. So
is the base game free?
Yeah, it's free. It's totally free to play.
That sounds interesting, just because one of the mechanics I do like is it rewards you for knowing your Final Fantasy history then, because if, like you said, you use a character and a weapon that, you know, belongs to that series in that particular dungeon, that is something you probably should be rewarded for, you know, being a loyal fan and knowing those little intricate details. And yeah, if it's a free start, there's no reason not to pick it up and at least give it a shot.
Yeah, it's free. And there's also something cool. At the beginning of a dungeon, it'll tell you a little story of why you're there. And if you've played these games, you'll know exactly what's going on. And it's just kind of cool to be reminded of, oh yeah, I remember when I did this. Oh, now I'm doing it in with Cloud in my party, and or with Titus, whatever, in my party. But yeah, so it's fun. It's my first cell phone game, and I've been trying it out. Maybe I'll review it for the site or something. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Well, definitely sounds interesting. If I had more time, I'd probably give it at least a quick look myself, just because of the fact that I do know a little bit about those older Final Fantasies. A little disappointed there's no 6 in there, though. It'll be coming, though, I guess.
Yeah, there. I guess it's coming in waves, because once you defeat everything, then you just go on to the events. And in the events, you get a lock, unlock other characters. But yeah, I believe Final Fantasy VII just recently opened up. So
okay.
Yeah. They don't want you to rush through the whole entire game, probably.
Right. Probably they want to drag it out for as long as they can, which is understandable.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so that's what I've been doing. We do have a topic of the week, Benny. And I went to Twitter and asked the followers, what are your favorite visual novels? And it's funny because... A lot of followers came up. So at White Cat Games says Ever 17 and Little Busters, but that's not the only Little Busters that was mentioned. Everybody seems to like this visual novel. Have you played this one?
No, actually, the first time I heard of Little Busters was when browsing through Crunchyroll and realized, hey, this show's on there. It looks like it might be interesting. I've still yet to watch it, but it might be a good thing, because what I keep hearing is that the anime didn't quite do the novel justice. And I was, to me, it's not really a surprise to hear that, hey, an anime was adapted from a visual novel, because it is a popular medium in Japan that a lot of anime, you know, are adopted out of, you know, just like you have, you have light novels, which also become different series, etc. So I'd actually be curious to give it a shot. Is it a fan translation, or do we know if that's actually been localized?
I believe that those are all fan. I'm not sure, though.
Okay.
Yeah, Steve loves Little Busters, so.
Yes.
At Chaos Rises. Chaos_rises, sorry. What he or she's into. The main games in the Muv Love series, Extra Unlimited and Alternative, and Alternative being his favorite or her.
Yeah, I've heard same thing. I've heard of those. It's I'm a kind of a bad visual novel fan in the fact that I've heard of a lot of these I don't want to quite call them mainstream, because of the fact that they really are kind of legendary in the fandom. But if you're a hardcore visual novel fan, games like these are the ones that you will hear about all the time. And it's one of those ones I just haven't quite gotten into. But I know it's a pretty big series, if I'm correct.
Yeah, a lot of what we got are from the Key kind of series. There's a website, kazamatsuri.org, who kind of focuses on all these Key visual novels. And I was looking at the site, there's a forum and stuff. So if you're into Little Busters and Planetarium and Clannad, this seems like good community to check out. So definitely look them up. Yeah, kazamatsuri.org. And
Yeah, I'd especially say maybe keep an eye on Clannad, because if I'm correct, Sakai Project is actually working on localizing that right now. So you might want to start looking up some information to prepare in preparation for that. Otherwise, the only other Key visual novel I have some minor experience with is Planetarium, which I had bought the iOS version quite some time ago. It's strange because that falls under a different category, sometimes called a kinetic novel, which is basically there's no choices, as far as I understand, in that one. But instead, you're just supposed to experience the story. And from what I've been told, that story gets very emotional towards the end.
Yeah. At CatGirl147 says Clannad and Grisai, and both of those games are getting localized. So
I cannot wait for Grisai.
Me too.
That was one of those anime series that I'm so glad I waited to watch until it was completely over, because once me and my roommate started watching it, we basically spent the whole day just going, no, we have to find out what happens in the next episode. And that adaptation was really goddamn good. So I'm really hoping that the visual novel is going to be a lot better.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites of last season, and I was watching it episode by episode. But it was really hard to have to wait. And both of the part 2 and 3 have already been announced. So those will be coming out also.
I think they're actually supposed to start airing this season. At least according to Crunchyroll, they're back in circulation. There just hasn't been a post saying, hey, they're going to be launching on this day and this day. So hopefully the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Great series. But with that said, we can jump into the interview that Steve and I have with Ubisoft. So with no further ado, the interview. I'm Azara Lopez, here with Steve Baltimore for a very special interview with the founder of Ubisoft, Talsim, and the writer for the team, Daniel.
Hey.
Now, for listeners that might not know, what is Ubisoft?
Well, basically, we started it around 3 years ago, and that was just to basically handle all of the games that we wanted to make. And before then, we just kind of had this one game, and it was just me doing the art and doing the writing. And then as I started getting people onto the team, I want to make more games. I decided to make this studio. And since then, we've gone from, say, Dizzy Hearts, which is the Kickstarter project we had. And then we're adding stuff like the Togo and Menagerie projects to our roster.
Go ahead, Daniel.
And so I was brought in along very early in the Menagerie process to write, but Togo already existed as a project that had been produced before, but was more like a demo in that it was not very long. It was produced in a month.
Yeah. What Tassim, what brought you on to doing visual novels and just starting that whole process? Like, what clicked and was like, this is what I want to do?
Well, for me, it was actually kind of a number of factors in that I had played them for a long time before. And then recently there was stuff like Analog and Katawa Shoujo, and then RenPy, which is the engine we use, which is an open source Python engine that's actually very lightweight and customizable. And all of those factors happened within about a year of each other. And it's sort of like set up this actual, you know, I guess you could say it's a culture of people making visual novels. And I figured that this was actually possible for me because I don't know how to program. I'm not very familiar with engines, but this is something that even I could do. And so, now what attracted me to the style of visual novels was, I tend to prefer more illustrated work rather than, say, doing comic books I'm actually kind of severely dyslexic. So when I read books, when I'm seeing pages of text, things begin to jumble for me, especially with the closeness of the words. And so it was very difficult for me to actually read many books because of that. And visual novels were a way for me to read stories where things were come kind of given to you. The lines would come in gradually, and then it would only be a paragraph at a time. So it was even something that I could read. And then those kind of all intersected. So I could do the art for it. I could do the writing for it. I could read it. I was happy.
I have just recently started getting into visual novels with the release of Danganronpa, but ever since then, with the help of Steve too, things like Clannad started popping up and just different works, and like it is something that kind of goes under the radar, but once you get hooked on it, it really grabs you, and it's like, wow, this is better than reading a book. It's like, you can experience it, and that's really cool that just from nothing to starting everything that you started that. For Daniel, what brought you to Loopysoft?
Well, originally I was just an office wage slave. Like, I still technically am. I do it part-time. But I'd been writing as opposed to visual novel, like actual novel-style books for the sake of doing it. And my friend, who is now my roommate across the wall over there, became PR for Loopysoft, and it was actually him who introduced me to the group because he knew I wrote stuff all the time and I was absolutely sick of office work. Absolutely sick. He said, you know what, maybe you would actually enjoy doing this stuff. And it turns out that I got introduced to a really cool writing team of people, and I realized that there's hope for a future where I can be creative for a living. Which is awesome. I've been able to spread out into other freelance projects, but won't speak of those. so this is Loopysoft time.
Yes.
And with them, I started doing a lot of Menagerie writing, and now with Toko's full release, we've been able to all be a part of that as well. And we just pick out great big old scenes of stuff. Everyone gets together, throws their ideas in the pan, builds up a timeline, and then we all just sort of get going on our roots, as it were. Then it's just been interesting. It's a process for writing that I was never originally a part of. And I don't know. That's all I can honestly say about it. It's been great so far.
So, Steve, you had some hands-on with the demo of Menagerie for Op Rainfall. And how did you enjoy it?
I really enjoyed it. I liked the music in it. The music was really good. It really brought the environment to life, the setting, because it was the music fit the culture that the novel was set in really well, and I also enjoyed the writing because the writing is different than a normal kind of urology, or it was to me, because it was very descriptive. Most urology is not that descriptive, And I thought that it all played out very well. And the artwork was pretty good, and I like the artwork, and I'm really interested to see where the story goes. You know, I mean, you just get a snippet out of a demo. I want to see how this all plays out.
Tessum, did you start the story on Menagerie? Was that your idea?
Yeah, I mean, most of the stories kind of start off with a concept, mm-hmm. and then I sort of... The setting where Menagerie takes place was actually already existed, but it was decided that we were going to do something in this particular setting. And, you know, we decided, okay, we're going to make like an adult game. And there's another game where we have concepted further down the line that is also set in the same city. But it's a very different game because Menagerie is sort of like a subculture. It's underground. It's mm-hmm. not something that's open to the general public. It's not, you know, that's the whole idea of it. It's supposed to be, has a mystique about it.
Yeah, and, that was something. Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
that was
no,
something. That was something that I really thought was interesting about it was that it was like the setting of it was like this underground subculture and things. And I thought that was a very interesting way to go with that.
Yeah, and I guess with the later game, it'll be sort of like the duality, because you kind of see nobles and such how they are when they're unreserved about how they act, whereas on the surface, everybody is very reserved, very closeted, and so that's sort of how we are going to go with the different kind of play of the culture. And we had a great musician on the team, Ryuno, who comes from who works out of Brazil, and he did the music for Menagerie, and he's doing a whole bunch of tracks on Toko. And for Menagerie, it was sort of we just kind of gave him a direction on this is kind of the atmosphere we're going with, the kind of instruments we're going with. And it you know, it bridges not just, you know, the Middle East, but, you know, India, Spain, all across the Mediterranean. And that's kind of like the atmosphere we wanted to go with.
And
Bruno is basically a savant. Like, here is an idea, an objective idea, and then it turns into a really, really amazing track.
And I can contest from the demo, he definitely got every one of those cultures across, because when I started playing that demo, that was the first places that I thought of when I heard that music, like just dead on. So it was dead on exactly that.
And that's really interesting to create a world and then have different, knowing that the universe is so big and then introducing different kinds of story elements to it so that anybody can experience it. So you're not just doing one thing with this universe, you're doing multiple things, and people can look forward to finding out more about it. So that's really cool that's happening with the world of Menagerie. Daniel, what is the story of Menagerie, or what's going on so far? If you can say anything, I don't know how much you can say.
Well, I mean, I guess overview wise, it's all from the main character's perspective, who you see in the demo. You know, it's all entirely from what she feels. There is a hint to a dream or a memory that she has that's going to be continually, it's brought up and built upon. And originally she starts as a character who is, for all intents and purposes, bland, like very stuck in this lifestyle that is entirely based around sex for pleasure of other people. But as she has these dreams and starts meeting the characters who you'll find in Roots, and that develops, she as the character is meant to develop. To say that there is a story to Menagerie is a really loose thing. There's definitely a timeline where if you go out on a route, eventually there are points where these routes intersect, or like chronologically. If you were to look at a big timeline, there would be a ton of splits for every single person. But every now and again, they'll intersect and spread off again. But that is not the focus so much as it is the characters themselves. Because the world already exists and is very vivid and East Asian, but it's the characters that you really read in a visual novel. Making up a novel style like a fantasy world story alongside it is kind of a waste of time when you could spend a lot more of it describing characters and following how they interact.
Do you see a difference between other, like, maybe Japanese visual novels and their writing styles and then your preferred writing styles?
That is an entirely different kettle of fish, and it scares me to talk about it. There is a very diehard distinction between being an original English language author for visual novels and being a Japanese visual novelist. Like, in Japan, you have far more funding because just generally it's been around for longer there, so it's more socially accepted. Even if, you know, like the news says, oh, it's the terrible culture, but everyone has that everywhere. And in most English-speaking countries where visual novels have only, you know, been a big deal for like the past 10 years, you would only be getting bootleg Japanese stuff. So the idea entirely is like, this comes from Japan. The visual novel is Japanese. It isn't. It's a literary device, so any language can do it. I don't think that there's a difference because you'll find, because, I mean, you're quite early in visual novel reading, right?
Yes.
You'll find that there are just as many different styles, even if they originally came from Japanese, as there are in English.
Absolutely, like you will.
There's just a massive variety. So you'll find, yeah, there's totally a difference between us and Japanese visual novels. But then there's ones where we're totally the same as them, because it's just sort of how it is.
And I could just make some comments about the language itself. Mostly, people who tend to break into visual novels, they look at the Japanese games as a way to emulate them, such as the Japanese setting, the Japanese characters, the Japanese names, and trying to imitate the Japanese writing style. The problem is that the Japanese writing style, it works in Japanese. It works in their culture. How they set up their paragraphs are so completely different to English paragraphs that it makes it very strange for English readers to read, and you have to get used to it. Like, you have to put yourself in the frame of mind that this is a different kind of language. And so one of the things we want to do with Menagerie was basically it's a adult game. We wrote it like an erotica, like you would actually write an erotic fiction. And then we decided to put images and music to it. And that is a more, it's the different styles. And so we wanted to do something different. And I wouldn't say it's better at all. I would just say that it's probably something more used to, my English readers are more used to that kind of style. And it's probably a little bit different for people to read.
It was definitely even a little different for me. Like I said earlier, it was different, but I really enjoyed it. But it was definitely different. Yeah. I even mentioned that in my preview.
Oh, yeah. Some of your favorite like Japanese-style visual novels will have almost been rewritten because a lot of the translations are either direct Japanese to English, which don't read as fluidly. They aren't as easy to take in. The really, really good visual novels that you read in English that came from Japan have been restructured. There are cases where scenes will be put in, like, you wouldn't, in Japanese, it's like, this was elsewhere. I remember reading this in Japanese, it was elsewhere before. But because as you pass through a paragraph, that turns into backwards, it suddenly makes a lot less sense. So you have to, they, like, really good translations from Japanese to English will even involve, like, scenes being swapped around because the way that they progress from the start of a paragraph to the end is different. Not just, like, from a sentence to the end, but not an entire paragraph will read totally differently from, you know, from beginning to end.
And this is why those people that always were like, yeah, we want a direct translation of this game when it's localized. I'm like, no, you don't.
No, no, you really don't.
You do not want that. Because, first of all, a lot of Japanese, especially limericks, you never want to do a straight Japanese like limerick or wordplay because it doesn't make any sense in English.
Yeah. At all. Exactly. I mean, one of the biggest differences that shakes people up is that in English, you know, you were, as a kid, you were drilled that if you write a paragraph, the whole paragraph has to fit an idea, has to support the thought that you put down in the first sentence. In Japanese, it's completely different. You can have a sentence and then that has one idea and a new idea in the next sentence and a new idea in the next sentence. You have five different ideas in the same sentence that are completely contradictory to each other or not exactly the same thought, and they can all go together. And that is completely 100% normal in Japanese language. It just does not make sense to English readers a lot of the time.
Well, Tassim, did you know about these kind of roadblocks along the way before you started doing visual novels? Did you know that there was like this kind of heat between Western fans saying, Western visual novels not as good as Japanese? Like, did you know about that when you started, or is it just something that's popped up from time to time while you've been creating these games?
Well, I would have to say that it's actually more of the websites themselves around visual novels, because as I sort of gotten involved in making visual novels, I was already a part of a lot of VN communities, and I started, you know, getting in contact with a lot of people who were translating visual novels or were diehard fans of visual novels. And a lot of them see what I do as different. They're not the same thing. And I don't want to try and say, you know, a lot of people try to say, okay, this, you know, visual novels are bad. We're going to make visual novels in English and they're going to be better than Japanese ones because there's somehow some inherent flawed aspect of Japanese visual novels. And I tend to just go, no, I mean, they're fine. They can coexist. And people are okay with that. And it just, there is sort of on several websites, there is sort of an undercurrent that if it was not produced in Japan, it has subpar quality. And maybe on a budget sense, that's true. But, you know, there is nothing that says you can't make an English original language visual novel that is actually good. It's just that a lot of people try to imitate Japan, and I think that's where the fault is.
I've read visual novels from Japan that are not that great, even with though they had big budgets. I mean, and I've read, yeah. I mean, it's all across the board. And then I've read English visual novels that were made here that had hardly no budget that were still great. I mean, it runs the gambit. So I was just never like that. To me, I treat like any other game. It doesn't matter where it was made. Is it good? And that's the bottom line on it.
Shovelware is not genre exclusive.
It exists everywhere. Exactly. It's everywhere. That is exactly true.
Maybe changing the subject a little bit, Tosim, I just want to talk about the Menagerie's art direction. It's really interesting, and I'm really liking the character design. Did you come up with those? Or?
I do the character designs, and I wouldn't necessarily say that they're inspired by anything in specific. I just tend to go a bit outlandish sometimes. And I mean, whatever kind of fits the character, I tend to go with. Joya's sprite was definitely fun to do. It was the most fun to do. It was also the most complicated because she has the wrap in her hair, and she has the baubles and the beads and the jewelry and all of that. Just, it was an immense amount of detail to draw, but it was also the most fun to draw. Yeah, and her body is covered in glitter, and that was actually, we went through a lot of different versions of that to get it right, because I wanted to make it look, rather than just rainbow dots, I wanted to make it look like glitter.
Yeah, I think the art is what kind of drew me in when Steve introduced me to the game, and I was just like, it's kind of like a toned down Vanillaware game. Where they're kind of like over the top characters, but like it just looks so good. But moving on to another one of your games, the Reject Demon Toko. How long has this game been in development?
Actually, not very long. I mean, in terms of actual time, it's probably only been in development for like maybe 3 months, but last year we did what was essentially a game jam. It was just by ourselves. So we wanted to test ourselves as a studio to see, especially with how we dealt with deadlines, how we dealt with extreme having to deliver extremely fast content. And so we decided that we were going to do this game and in about a month. And this started off as a kind of, it started from a 800 word story that I had written, which was essentially about this demon that was kicked out of hell. And she meets this human who takes her in. And then it's sort of like her past comes back to haunt her. I mean, you know, in a literal sense, but there's more to it than that. And then we did this month long game, and then it wasn't supposed to be like a true exercise in the quality that we could put out. It was just supposed to be the best we could do, the fastest we could do. And it turned out really well. I mean, it was enormous. We put it on Gumroad for pay what you want, and it was really popular, surprisingly. And it quickly became one of our most popular games and storylines, because people started getting incredibly invested in the background of this world. And so when people were mentioning, are you going to continue the story? Are you going to expand it? And then I decided, okay, on next year, this year, on the anniversary, I was going to announce that we were going to remaster the game, and we were essentially going to double its length. So we were going to add a whole new scenario onto the end of it, add more characters that we couldn't, add CGs, add more music. And so pretty much everything has either been doubled or tripled in the amount of writing, music, or assets we've had to do. And the story over the last year has expanded. So what was just kind of like this one short idea and a concept became a breathing world, and then four parts of an actual story arc.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, what you're going to see is chapter zero.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Have you been working on Toko or just mainly the Menagerie?
I was brought in for the Menagerie's writing. The remastering of Toko happened after we'd already started Menagerie. Like, this had come about. Like, the writing lead who now runs, you know, making sure that all of us do our jobs, was one of Tao's very few writers at the time that the Toko game jam thing actually happened. So now suddenly he's got a team to try and produce this whole thing. And it's, yeah, I've done a bunch of scenes, not as much as I'll be producing for Menagerie, but also lots of, you know, feedback and stuff, because the lead Colleen has a team she has access to. Suddenly you can pull in a lot more ideas. You can pull in a lot more creative feedback for stuff that's already existing. So there's some stuff where I've been part of expansion, and there's some of the new scenes as well that I've put together. But we've all taken our part in it.
And Toko is all ages, right? And
yes, it's safe for work, as it were.
Yeah.
Barely.
It's actually on Steam, Azori.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it got green. Yeah.
I'm going to check that out.
We've got a lovely, sexy looking preview advert video. It's already up on YouTube and hosted by Sekai Project.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I've actually been messaging them for a little while for their Grisai stuff, hoping to get into that and do some campaigning for them. But I did see that you guys are doing some stuff with them. Tausama, how has working with Sekai Project helped you, kind of, if anything?
Well, I had gotten in contact with Sekai Project before the Kickstarter for Dizzy Hearts. So that was in about early 2013, I believe. And so I've known them for about 2 years now. And so we originally decided, okay, we're going to, this is when they were just taking off. They had only World End Economica that they were bringing over. And now they've added a substantial amount to their library, and they've grown significantly since then. And back then it was like, okay, how about we team up and we'll bring Dizzy Hearts to Steam? And then, you know, this is sort of like going on. Dizzy Hearts has still been in development. It's a much larger game than any of our other games. And so, it's basically have been taking a lot of time to produce. So we have other games that are coming out that are shorter, that are faster, that don't take as much time, but are also, you know, just as important to us as a studio while we work on Dizzy Hearts. And so they wanted to bring on Togo to Steam. And, you know, I mean, I collaborate with them, and I have no complaints. I mean, I wouldn't suggest it's for everybody, because with Greenlight, the way it is, almost anybody could get published. Yeah. I mean, almost anybody can get greenlit now if they put in the effort and the publishing or whatnot. It's just, we decided to do this with Sakai Project because we have this partnership with them. And
in reality, they don't have their own PR engine. They're just a publisher. So although we're partnered with Sakai Project and they've helped in some measure with stuff like funding, all the advertising, it's totally been in-house on Loopysoft's side.
Will you guys ever be taking up any kind of localization thing or doing any, helping any other, projects in around, or just sticking to your own stuff?
I've not actually been approached to, do any writing or do any art for anything, but I mean, we have a lot of projects that are potentially in the pipeline.
Yeah.
I mean, I could probably go forever just off of ideas. Ideas are kind of fast and easy, and with the world the way it is, you could do any kind of number of stories in it. So, I mean, it's just sort of like we go year to year. We figure out, okay, what are we going to do this year? And we try and plan around that. And then next year we'll, you know, in 2016, we'll have another meeting and figure out what we're going to do next year. And, you know, things will probably change.
I like the idea that if you're into these games, there is stuff to look forward to, though. It's not just going to end like some of your favorite animes. It's you'll get to this world again and you'll see maybe a recurring character or something. But, like, I like that idea that there's plans for the future, and that's good.
Yeah, it's a prevalent idea, because when you're doing a novel, you do world building before you do any story.
Mm-hmm.
So what's to say you can't use that same world again? You tend to fall in love with it as well.
Like, definitely.
I love the heck out of Menagerie's World. It's a really, really cool East Asian-styled place with scary nobles and merchants and weird, mysterious dragon people and all sorts of crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, and the idea that how all these the way this game branches, it seems almost endless, how it's described and stuff. And do you have a release window for that, or do you have an idea?
We usually don't like to give dates sometimes, because they might tend to bite us in the ass sometimes. We've had to delay Togo for about a week while we finished up the assets, so it's going to be releasing in a week from now on April 14th. After that is our plan to release Menagerie, and all I can say is that you should expect it approximately late spring, early summer, but we can't give any definites, and that might change as well. And then Dizzy Hearts, we would love to have that out this winter if possible.
Well, take all the time you need. I have no gripes against delayed games, because that just means that they're going to come out looking good. Looking real good.
I mean, we already told Tao off because he was starting to skip sleep entirely.
So again, when does Toko come out?
It's in a week from now on April 14th. So 14th. Six days and 15 hours.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's that, like a more that game exciting looks really cool. And I'll probably be picking it up because I need to get into these projects. I really enjoy the art for the Menagerie, and for our listeners, if you haven't seen it, Lupusoft.com has them all listed in their game section. Just the art is really good, and you have music up there and stuff too. So, Steve, do you have any questions or anything you like?
Is Toco going to release episodically?
Yes. Our current plan is to for this one is Chapter Zero. It's the first part, and it's going to release for $4.99, and then there's going to be a $1.99 soundtrack that's going to accompany it as a DLC, and so you can get the whole thing for $6.99 or $7 basically. And from there, we're going to finish Dizzy Hearts and then work on the remaining three parts of Toco at the same time. And at that point, we'll set a release schedule for all of the parts. So we won't set the schedule until all of the parts are done. And at that point, they will release regularly on a fixed schedule.
Tessim, the Menagerie has a Patreon that people can check out.
This is it's a Tausim at Patreon. You just look it up, or you go to patreon.com/Tausim. And that is just a general Patreon for all of Lupusoft. And we had the Kickstarter a couple years ago, and we decided that we were not going to do a Kickstarter for every game, especially since Dizzy Hearts is still in development. And so a way for us to keep the lights on, keep things going and paying people, we use Patreon. And so Dan, we pay him through Patreon. We pay all of our writers through Patreon. The bulk of the money we use for buying the music or the video that appears on Steam, a lot of that comes from Patreon. And so it's not just, I tend to skip sleep or skip eating in order to make certain things happen for people so that we can get this, game out fast as possible. So, we usually say, you know, the more money we have in Patreon, the more funding we can afford. And that's always been my goal, because I have ideas of things I would like to do and games we like to make that would require higher budgets. But those things might have to wait until after Dizzy Hearts are done. But if you'd like to support us, I put sketches and concept art up on there. I plan to be doing more stuff as I get more feedback. I don't know if people are interested in tutorials or things like that, but I put stuff that I usually, if it's either only on Patreon that I put it there, or I put it on several days or even weeks in advance of when I'll advertise it on Steam. I'll also interact with people more directly there and, you know, run polls and all kinds, and just give people thoughts on the ideas that I have for the future that are less binding than if I announce them. Because if it comes from me publicly, it seems kind of like an announcement.
Mm-hmm. And these are, if you enjoy Lupusoft content, like, this is a good way to see more of it. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Patreon's a great idea, and she really connects, developers and people with the fans of content, from what I've seen. And yeah, so we'll definitely be putting that in the show notes. Steve, you have any questions? Or
I think we about covered everything.
Yeah, well, guys, thank you for having this interview and coming to Operating Fall and Total Control and telling us about your game, The Menagerie. And also, for listeners, Toco does come out next week, so we'll have that in the show notes also for you to check out. Thank you for listening. through the power of the internet. We're back.
Hello, everyone.
Just for some insight, Benny, do you have any other visual novels that maybe people can check out and discard? A place for them to discover them, at least? I don't know.
Well, myself, I'm more of a connoisseur of the eroge, you know, 18-plus genre of visual novels, mainly because that's a lot of what's been localized here until recently. If you're looking for something that's non-eroge, I'd recommend maybe Sakura. I've mentioned this before, Sakura Wars, So Long My Love for the PlayStation 2 and Wii is very much a visual novel with some, you know, with game elements in it. So that's always a good way to kind of start, though it's not a pure visual novel. If you're looking for something that's a bit more, you know, visual novel-y, If My Heart Had Wings was released by Moe Novel and is available on Steam. I believe Manga Gamer was the publisher. That got rated T because the eroge sections were taken out of the game. Now, I haven't played the entire thing myself, mainly because it is an actual HD visual novel, and you need a somewhat okay computer to run it. Nothing crazy, but my computer's about 6 or 7 years old, so it's a little slow. But just forewarning, there within 2 weeks, somebody had a patch in there to restore the eroge content. So, you know, if you're a parent looking maybe to pick it up for a kid for some reason, just keep that in mind. Because it does say rated T on the box, so I don't want to, you know, give a false impression that, yeah, there's nothing in this. But Manga Gamer does do a lot of localizations. They have all their all ages editions are on Steam for some of their more, I don't know off the top of my head, quite a lot of the all ages, but just search Manga Gamer on Steam and you can take a look through their backlog. For myself, like I said, because I'm more of an eroge guy, I actually have quite a collection here that I still need to play through, but some interesting ones I'll note. Kohime Muso, which is available on Manga Gamer's website. That one you'll have to buy a download edition or the physical copy from J-List. That's a really damn good visual novel. It clocks in at about 40 plus hours. If you're going by visualnoveldatabase.org, it's 60 plus, but I don't know about that itself. It's very long, though. There are some very minor strategy game elements in it for the battles, but you will kind of tear your hair out until you figure out how to cheap the system out. But it's a really good story. There's a lot of drama. There is a lot of romance. The endings, I think, could use a little bit of work, but at the same time, it's a really good value for the buy. Of course, being at about, I think it's like $45, you know, for what you're getting, it's kind of the exception, I think, in the genre, because most of these eroge are roughly about $40 to $50 for the longer ones. And 20 to 30 for the shorter ones. Another classic is Kana Little Sister, which, yes, from the title, you know, you can imagine there's going to be some content that people might think is objectionable. But I'll just say that it's a famous visual novel that falls into what's called the depressing game genre. I think it's Utsuge is the definition, but it's meant to be a very emotional ride. The very short version is you're an older brother. You have a younger sister named Kana who you see grow over 10 years who has a kidney disease. And as I mentioned, this is something that's supposed to be about the feels and the emotions. So I'll give you 3 guesses as to what her eventual fate most likely is going to be. So, but it's a classic. So I'd
happily ever after.
Yeah. You know, it was made in 1995, I think, and I think that's about right. But for the day, it was really revolutionary. Now it's a cliche storm, but at the same time, it's one of those ones that it really kind of stood on its own. I'd say give it a shot. But really, just if you go into vision, if you decide to go down the eroge path and take a look at that stuff, just go in with an open mind. There is something for everybody. I mean, not everything is completely dark, you know, sexual, you know, bondism, torture, anything like that. There are a lot of lighthearted and completely ridiculous games like Boob Wars. And that is an actual title of a game, yes. So just go in with an open mind, take a look at things. Like I said, if that's not your cup of tea, there are a ton of all ages editions coming out soon, like Grisaia, like Clannad. Just keep your eyes and ears to the ground, and also take a look at the site. We'll be covering some of these things as they come out. Oh, and of course, how could I forget Steins Gate, which came out last year. Haven't played it yet, but still, it's one of those ones that a lot of people are talking about, and it's a good place probably to start.
Yeah. Virtual's Last Reward is really good, too. We've talked about that on the podcast before, but but speaking of visual novels and maybe something that's not a visual novel, Twitch had previously banned Senran Kagura from being streamed and calling it a visual novel. How do you feel about that, Benny?
Okay. I think I mentioned it earlier. I've been working on an editorial, and I mean, I have been working on this thing for the last 4 days. I've got my own thoughts on it, so I won't spoil everything I'm going to throw in the editorial, but I'll just put it this way. Senran Kagura is not a visual novel. It's also not a visual novel with adult content, which is in a roguelike. You know, I don't have the exact definition in front of me, but that's basically what Twitch was essentially calling it without calling it. The game has fan service, yes, gratuitous fan service. It's meant to be silly and over the top and funny. And the way that this whole thing went down was really kind of just dumb. I'm looking for it on the site right now. We had one of our writers, Joe, I can't remember your last name right now, and I'm scrolling through this. There we go. Let's see here. You know, this is exciting audio. Joe Sigadell, I believe is how it's pronounced, wrote an opinion piece on Twitch's ban of Estival Versus from his own perspective as a longtime Twitch guy. And it's a really interesting read. I'd recommend giving it a look just because of the fact that it gives his own perspective on it. During that day, actually, this went down. I did jump online just to stream Shinobi Versus so we could test and see if it was a just series wide ban or just Estival Versus. I'm happy to report I was not banned, but I personally decided to go ahead and stop streaming on Twitch, at least until this whole, you know, thing is sorted out. And there's another wrinkle to the story we got today, which is apparently, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, that Estival Versus was never banned, but instead it was an issue with the streamer possibly focusing on the sexual content, quote unquote. Which doesn't make a lot of sense considering that as sexual as Senran Kagura gets is the fact that we have girls standing there with cute faces censoring their breasts. So I'm confused.
Yeah, like it's not bad. And often it's kind of boring to do that part of the game. So I can't imagine anyone doing it for very long.
No, it's one of those things like you do it to grind for the, because there are a couple of trophies I know in Shinobi Versus that are tied to basically completely stripping an opponent so many times. Yes. Even Akiba Strip did that. Okay. It's just one of those things that they, to get you used to the systems. And I'll admit, when I play through the game, usually I will kind of try and do it just because of the fact that it's a good test for me to basically, I can tear through an opponent in 3 seconds because most of my characters are level 50 and I'm fighting guys who should be fighting at level 20. It takes a bit more skill to slowly whittle them down and whittle the clothing away and then finish them off with that big flashy attack. You know, otherwise, if I want to just tear through them, I just combo their, you know, asses into the ground. But it's one of those things that what I really just dislike about this whole situation is just the bad rap Senran Kagura keeps getting. And that's kind of more what the editorial I'm working on is about. It's just trying to dispel some of this nonsense that it's just a series that's only about, you know, mindless fan service and boobs and whatnot. And let's not kid ourselves. The fan service is a big part of it. Hell, one of the producers has gone on record saying, you know, I believe the exact quote is, you know, home is tits and ass is hometown, you know. But he's basically making the game to have fun. And that's the whole, I think, idea behind it. So that's at least my own personal opinion on the matter.
Yeah, I got I think it was like Life is Tits, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I don't have it unfortunately open right in front of me, but it's
yeah,
like
it's so you got it pretty close, but ass is definitely hometown.
That's just a great quote, though. When you have the producer,
he doesn't care. No, he does not care. You can give Senran Kagura the worst rap ever, but he still wants to make these games, I suppose. And that's what it is. It's funny to him. It's not. It's sexual, but it's a joke. It's supposed to be taken as comedy. Even the anime, even the game, everything. It's supposed to be lighthearted, funny.
Yeah, here it is. Tits are life, ass is hometown.
There it goes.
Yeah. So I mean, it's when you're throwing out lines like that, you know, it's just like, look, I'm making the game that I want to make because I find this funny, or you know what, at the same time, I want to celebrate the sexuality. So screw you all. You know, I just love that attitude.
Yeah, definitely. That new OVA for Senran Kagura actually shows nudity. So if anybody.